In Connecticut, 1729 and after, Buddhist noises. In a letter written on August 13, 1729, the Reverend Mr. Stephen Hosmer of East Haddam, Connecticut, referred to fearful and dreadful sounds that unnerved locals. I have myself heard 8 or 10 sounds successively, and imitating small arms in the space of 5 minutes, he said. I have, I suppose, heard several hundreds of them within 20 years, some more, some less terrible. Sometimes we have heard them almost every day, in great numbers of them, in the space of a year. Oftentimes I've observed them coming down from the north, imitating slow thunder, which shakes the houses and all that is in them. He added that since the great earthquake of 1727, the sounds have in a manner ceased. There have been but 2 heard since that time, and these but moderate. Half a century earlier, the first European settlers learned of the noises from the native Wangunk Indians. The Wangunk called the area at the foot of Mount Tom in the south-central part of the state just east of Connecticut River, Matchemudas, meaning place of noises. It was later shortened to Mudas, and it became the name of a village 2.5 miles north of East Haddam. At first, skeptical, the colonists soon heard the sounds themselves. The first printed reference dates back to 1702 and suggests that even the sounds were thought to emanate from underground. The sounds would come and go, sometimes after going unheard for years, they would resume at a furious pace. A variety of legends and theories grew up around the noises. Traditional Wangunk lore held that they were the result of battles inside the mountain between good and bad witches. One white settler proposed that a subterranean passage linked the mountain south to the sea, and that the tunnel carried wind and tidal sounds inland. Others suspected the spontaneous explosions of underground gases and minerals. According to one local legend, a man named Steele arrived in East Haddam around 1765, touting his discovery of a fossil he called a carbuncle. It looked like a white stone, but became so brilliantly luminous in the dark that at night the house in which Steele was staying appeared to be on fire and was seen at a great distance. This was reported by the Reverend Henry Chapman to the editor of the American Journal of Science many years later. Steele, who had found the fossil on the mountain, claimed that the carbuncle was in some way responsible for the noises. On his departure, soon after, he predicted that they would be heard no more. As early as the late 18th century, however, educated opinion linked the sounds to earthquake activity, as the Reverend Hosmer's words indicate. Indeed, there is some evidence that the sorts of seismic stresses that generate earthquakes may also cause luminosity in certain rocks. During particularly dramatic manifestations of the sounds, buildings and ground would shake. In 1897, for example, according to an article in Science soon afterward, there was a sound like a clap of thunder, followed by, for some 2 hours, like a roar, which was like the echoes of a distant cataract. A day later, there was a crashing sound like heavy muffled thunder, and a roar not unlike the wind in a tempest. The ground was shaken, causing houses to tremble and crockery to rattle, as though in an earthquake. Modern seismic detection equipment has confirmed the connection between the sounds and earthquakes. By 1979, seismometers had established that earthquake activity, though usually so slight it could be discerned only by technology, and the sounds always accompanied one another. The seismic activity was contained within a relatively small, sphere-shaped area, some 760 feet in diameter, 4,560 feet beneath the surface. As yet, however, geologists cannot explain why such small earthquakes, many of them just 2 on the Richter scale, can generate such dramatic sonic effects. Comparable seismic-linked sonic phenomena have been reported at a number of locations around the world.